On page 216, we're on chapter 17. Clarity of Pure Devotion said, "Those who neglect the procedures of the scriptures and yet perform worship endowed with faith, infused with loyalty and sincerity, is it sattva, raja, or tamas, light, desire, or darkness?" And the respected Supreme Divinity said, "The intrinsic nature of faith for those who wear bodies is of three kinds, of light, desire, or darkness. Listen. Faith is the form of the true being of all, O descendant of the light of wisdom, Arjuna. Man consists of his faith. He is what he believes in. The men of light worship the shining ones, gods. The men of desires worship the lords of wealth and those who pursue selfishness. The people of darkness worship disembodied spirits and the multitude of others. Men who perform not in accordance with the procedures of the scriptures, united with hypocrisy and egotism, are attached by the strength of their desires. Even those people who torture the elements of their body unconscious of me know that their objective is full of division. The food of all, the sacrifice, the austerity, the giving are also of three kinds. Listen to their distinctions. Pure people will love food which is tasty, mild, substantial, and agreeable, and is conducive to life, purity, strength, freedom from disease, and gives pleasure. Those of the quality of desire prefer foods which are bitter, sour, salty, too hot, pungent, dry, burning, which produce pain, grief, and poor health. Beings of darkness like food which is stale, without taste, putrid or rotten, which is left over and is impure. The sacrifice which is offered without a desire for fruit, observing scriptural procedures with the mind concentrated in the offering, that is an offering of light. O best of descendants of the light of wisdom, Arjuna, that sacrifice which is offered seeking for fruit, or even for the purpose of ostentation, know that to be of the quality of desire. That sacrifice is said to be of the quality of darkness, which is performed without scriptural procedure, without distribution of food, without mantras, without gifts of appreciation, and which is devoid of faith. The worship of the gods, the twice-born knowers of wisdom, the guru and the wise, purity, the purification of knowledge, moving continuously with God, causing injury to no embodied being, these are called spiritual austerities. Speech which does not cause excitement, which is truthful, pleasant, and beneficial, which reflects the practice of an individual's course of study, is called the austerity of speech. A consecrated mind, gentleness, silence, belonging to your own soul, a completely pure attitude, this is called austerity of the mind. These three kinds of austerities practiced by men with the highest faith, without desire for fruit, are said to be in union with light. The surrender of the body, the mind, and the soul. The austerity which is practiced with ostentation for the purpose of attaining respect, honor, or reverence, which is inconsistent and transitory, that is called the quality of desire. That austerity which is practiced with a foolish idea, even torturing one's own soul for the purpose of causing injury to others, that is declared to be of the quality of darkness. That gift which is given to a worthy recipient at the right place, at the right time, because of the privilege of giving without expectation in return, is remembered as the quality of light. That gift which is given reluctantly with a specific motivation and an expectation to receive some fruit again in return, that gift is remembered as of the quality of desire. That gift given to unworthy recipients without respect at the wrong place and the wrong time with insult is declared to be of the quality of darkness. Om Tat Sat, the infinite beyond conception, Om, that is truth, is the three-syllable declaration remembering supreme divinity. By that utterance, those who know supreme divinity, supreme wisdom, and sacrifice were originally created. Therefore, those who speak of divinity always begin all acts of sacrifice, giving, and austerity, saying Om, as spoken of in the scriptures. Vishnur Om Tat Sat. Those who desire liberation perform various acts of sacrifice and austerity and acts of giving without coveting fruit while saying Tat, that, as in that supreme divinity. The word Sat is used, son of she who excels Arjuna, in the attitude of truth, in the attitude of pure efficiency, and is also used for auspicious actions. Sat is also proclaimed in connection with consistency in sacrifice, austerity, or giving, and also in actions for that purpose. Whatever austerity is practiced or performed or offered or given without faith is called asat, untrue, unreal, without value here or in the future. Oh. Any questions in chapter 70? Yes. And all creation is begins with the sankalpa. And all sankalpas begin with Om Tat Sat. And that's how we take the sankalpa, Om Tat Sat. And then we give. And then we sacrifice. Do we have any questions?
Can I ask a question back on 16?
Sure.
Why is it coming down so hard on the forces of darkness when it's just a play? I mean, and the dark forces are just as important as the light forces.
Yes, absolutely.
In the past, he said he's aloof from this. He doesn't punish or reward. It's just the play of the goodness.
He's not punishing, he's just describing.
He's saying he's throwing them into your wounds and things like that. Is he taking on the identity with the goodness here or something?
Well, no, those individuals of impurity are born again and again with selfish desires in impure wombs, which means they are born into worldly attachments. And they thrive on worldly attachments. And they seek out worldly attachments each time. He's merely describing to us our choices.
That I'm fine. It's just when he claims that I throw those cruel enemies, lowest among men. And it seems in the past he would say that this is just the play of nature, consciousness.
Nature and the consciousness. And who is that I? That is nature and consciousness. That's the eye of Shankya. Nature and consciousness in union is saying, I throw those cruel enemies. It's their nature. Their nature of its own accord will allow them to reap the rewards of their karma. Now, then that means they move into this ocean of objects and relationships, this samsara, and they are attached to worldliness, and they are born again and again with the impurities of division, with selfishness. Not necessarily.
But it's just this I throw, and I is Krishna.
Yes.
So I just wonder about Krishna, what he's identifying with, the forces of nature.
What it says here is tan aham. Aham. Tan aham. It's the aham that is doing the throw. Yes. Well, it's his throwing as he's throwing as the supreme ego, aham brahmasmi, the ego of Lord. He's throwing into this ocean of worldliness. Now, of course, it's our nature, and we're evolving according to our nature. So here we move into this ocean of worldly attachments, and we stay there because we're cultivating greater attachments. And when we grab onto the feet of the guru and say, I don't want to be in this ocean of worldliness anymore, let me be free from worldliness, then that's what becomes of us. Yes, absolutely. We were discussing that for the last few days, that the soul is never destroyed. Here he's not even talking about destroying anything, though. He's talking about the lower natures of men, those with animalistic tendencies, wandering around in worldliness, pursuing selfish goals. They just stay there in their selfishness. Remember, there are three kinds of human beings, or three orders of all beings. Pashu, the lotus bhav, those who are only responding from instinct. Birya, the middle bhav, those who are striving to improve. And Dibya, the highest bhav, those who are already divine.
So are there actually beings that are eternally in hell and never evolve?
Well, the hell is, of course, is the confusion of multiple attachments.
Sure. But someone was saying here for eternity that these will never rise.
Well, there's hope for all of us. So one day they will come into contact with a pure soul like Bhuvananda, who will come and inspire them to rise up from their confusion of their worldly attachments. And then they begin to evolve. But, you know, when you're there in that confusion, it seems like an eternity. Every moment seems like an eternity when you're nurturing confusion. You're dealing with a problem and a conflict, every moment is the weight of that problem and that conflict. It's all an eternity. But I don't think he means for all time and forever and ever. I think he means for until Bhuvananda will condescend to move into that sphere of reality and inspire people to become better and to raise themselves out of it. I believe that's why it's so important for Srima to remain in the United States and to travel around and to share her love. Because she is such a pure soul that she can go into an environment of selfishness and worldly attachment and remain unaffected by it and inspire all of us to change the directions of our lives. She can't. I mean, look at how many people have congregated to listen to the Bhagavad Gita because of her presence. And that's the same thing each of one of us is going to become. the shisha of the guru, the reflection of the perfect reflector. That's her goal, is to make each one of us empowered so that we can create the same inspiration wherever we go and not be affected by other people's confusions and conflicts and attachments, but merely to wade through the, navigate through all the attachments until we find our perfect goal. I believe that's her aspiration. That's why all of us have congregated here. Are there other questions?
I like the number 9.
You like number 9, Sri. Number 9, chapter 17, yes. Those of the quality of desire prefer foods which are bitter, sour, salty,
no, not that one.
Too hot?
No, that pure people will love number 8.
Oh, pure people will love food which is tasty. Mmm, she wants tasty food, huh? Yeah. Mild.
Settle, it grows bold.
Yeah. She likes the tasty food. Yes, please.
Coming to 16, it's a general question. I don't know the Bhagavad Gita as well as I know the Christian scriptures. And much is said about the wisdom of the ancient rishis and how they knew so much and that their wisdom is there for us to garner today. But in the Christian tradition, in the Old Testament, there's a lot of very, very beautiful writing and people wondering about the creation and the beauty of it all. And it's very well-written, moving passages. But many people, what we call fundamentalists, interpret every word literally. And you end up with absurdities, including the Flat Earth Society. And we see in the Old Testament the evolution of the Jewish culminating in what's called a New Testament. It used to be said this and that, but I say to you this and that. And is this not true, possibly, of the Hindu scriptures, that it can be used as a guide, but not as something to be literally followed in all cases? Maybe people who are thought to be so wise in the old days aren't as wise, possibly, as all the people who do now. How do you see that?
Well, I believe that there are fundamentalists of every color. In fact, I've met quite a few of them myself. I'm one of them. But if there are fundamentalists, it depends on the type of interpretation that we give to the scripture, how we want to follow it. And of course, in our philosophy, jhotamoth thotapoth, as many as there are individuals, so many there are ways of interpreting and designing a path that's meaningful for ourselves. So the scriptures can definitely be a guide in designing that. And of course, we'll counsel people to steer clear of the large boulders of fundamentalism, because those of us who speak more than one or two languages, we understand that the same things are described in different ways in different cultures, so that we'll open up our minds to different interpretations and not say that my way and my name is the best way or the only way, as fundamentalists of every color are prone to do. So if we steer clear of fundamentalism, then we could very well probed the scriptures to see what wisdom and what inspiration that people of the past were offering to people of the future. It's my contention that scripture is something that was passed down with the highest reverence, saying these are actual experiences of people who are in tune with God. If you study this and find out how you can emulate it in your life, you're going to find similar experiences that they found. And that's why scriptures are revered. That's why we have Bible studies, and we have Bhagavad Gita studies, and we have a circle in so many religious places where religious people are prone to meet. Well, that's my understanding. The scriptures are certainly important to give us inspiration and direction. Here they're always counseling, control your selfishness. Try to share. Be a being of light. Strive for unity and harmony in every action. This is what they're extolling as efficient behavior. Paying attention to what you're doing. And I think that's wise counsel for every generation. I see nothing adverse in following the scriptures as they're being explained. Now, if it said, kill the enemies, and I picked up my sword and went out to do battle, I would think that if I projected that the enemy is something out there instead of something in here, then I think that I'm a fundamentalist in taking literally the word of the scripture, because I'm not applying it to an internal search. But so long as we have the understanding that what our objective is to purify, of course, we discussed in our first chapter this dharmakshetra, kurukshetra, this field of action and the field striving to maintain the ideal of perfection in every behavior is what this book is about, and that's what our study is about. And if all of us approach in that way, I believe scripture can be a very, very helpful guide to bring us towards a fulfilling life and a focused, free from delusion, free from confusion. Extricate us from the hell of this worldly attachment. Thank you.
Swami, you have translated Tamasic in the Devi scriptures in a very different way, and you have painted it as the tendency of darkness in this particular scripture.
I've translated in different ways in this scripture all throughout the scripture, too. So we have the quality of darkness and the quality of light and the quality of passion. We also have, you know, Sattva, Raja, Tama can be described in many, many different ways according to the circumstances. And I did take some poetic license there. They've also been described as the quality of light being Sattva, the quality of truth, the quality of patience or peace. Rajas being the quality of desire, of activity, tamas being the quality of ignorance, darkness, not knowing, or sleep, or rest, rejuvenation.
But darkness alone would be a radical explanation.
It is totally...
It might alleviate Gulananda's concern.
Yes.
If it wasn't just darkness.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. I suggest that you read all of the different books that I've written and see the various ways that I've translated Thomas. Thank you very much. That's a very valid point.
A dull place without darkness. In fact, there's this story, I can't remember the exact words, that in the beginning God created these great rishis. But they were so pure that the world was so dull that he had to give things like jealousy and things like this,
the creation and Bhuvananda, we are praying for a dull moment. in reality, he made it so interesting that here we are praying for a little bit of boredom. Could we just stop it for a few moments?
You're grabbing for him a couple of days.
Yes. You can't imagine what a dull class this was in your absence. No one had anything to say.
Truly, when you're in mom's position, the whole thing is a joy. I mean, even the darkness is just all fun. It's just a movie.
Do you like the movies, Mom?
Okay, go fix my heater.
Bring some light to her situation. Om Sang Saraswati Namaha. Jai Ma.